Well, you know, last week in the show, Toby, when we had, we were looking at some of the technical deficiencies of our West Indian batsmen. We're going to certainly look at that again. And why is it that these guys are not playing short bowling? I mean, look at someone like a Wagner. You know, he's not quick, but these guys are on the back foot. Phil O'Wallace was a good hooker and a puller. Technically, what's going wrong there? Talk to me, Toby.
Well, I think you've got to look at the cricket that they're playing regionally and the type of pitches they're playing on. Mm-hmm. And you guys would probably know more than I know. I've spent 10 years on and off in the West Indies, and I've seen the pitches haven't had the pace that I know that they would have had in the years gone by. I think there would have been more fast bowlers. I think probably every regional side had some genuinely top fast bowls on faster pitches. So I think players were used to playing the pace day in, day out. And they got used to, you know, your Richie Richardson, your Desi Haynes, or you know, all the greats all had a very good back foot game. So I think it was probably a combination of what they were playing on in their regional cricket. And then when they were playing as a team, you know, they're always playing fastball and you get good at it. What you're finding now with the West Indian players, you're getting more spinners in the domestic cricket. The wickets are slower. So they're actually playing spin now far better than they used to. Mm-hmm. So when you come up against teams that have good spinners, in the days, there used to be days when the West Indians would come running down and get trapped, you know, get stuck halfway down the wicket. That doesn't happen anymore. They play spin better than they used to because they're the type of surfaces they're getting. Personally, I'd like to see some investment in the pitches in the Caribbean so that regional cricket, the bowlers learn to bowl on good wickets. Batters can be confident that the ball is a consistent bounce and a good pace and is more realistic to a test match type pitch. And I think the standard of cricket will improve. I just think it needs a little bit of investment in pitches. And I honestly believe that play will improve on the back of it. It's probably not the only reason some of these players are struggling against the short ball. I think it's a major contributor.
Philo?
Andrew, I just think they're afraid of the ball bouncing.
Ooh.
Because this year in our regional cricket, the pitches were bouncing.
Mm.
And guys score runs. And some guys got hit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that their trigger movement is bad. They do not move their back foot towards that back and across that we're accustomed hearing about.
Mm-hmm.
They're still leg side of the ball to hit the ball through the offside only. So when the short ball is on their bodies, they have nowhere to go because they're locked off. They're big targets and they just push their hands at the ball. If a West Indies batsmen were going back and across and picking up the line of the ball and the length of the ball from that trigger movement,
mm-hmm.
they will be able to play the short ball a lot better. They will play the short ball outside of their left shoulder. When you look at a lot of them, they're playing the short ball inside their left shoulder, so they have nowhere to move. And I'm speaking about the right-handed batsman. Mm. Bravo is worse because he stays on leg stump. So once the ball bounces, he's betwixt and between.
Ooh.
So I believe that our batsmen need to move their back foot back and across to cover that off stump, to pick up that line and length of that delivery. And once they do that, they have a better gauge on if to play or if not to play or even to pull. If we look at Blackwood in 100, he stays on leg stump. So he fans the ball. He always fanning at the ball down the leg side.
Mm.
Because if Blackwood goes across the off stump, he could either pull those balls or leave them. But our batsman trigger movement is wrong. And that is where our mistakes are being made. And I said it on this program many times. They need to shorten the pitch at practice.
Okay.
Instead of batting on 22 yards, bat on an 18-yard pitch, their bat speeds are slow. Wait.
Ooh, it's interesting you say that.
Mm.
Philo, it's interesting you say that because that was one of the things we used to do when I was there. I used to throw off 16 yards. We used to throw off 16 yards.
Mm. Bat speed is slow.
We used to go six. So when they went in the middle, they're off 22. They got an extra 6 yards to play off. It's got to be easier. You train hard, you play easy. You have to test yourself in practice. You've got to test yourself. I think if you're comfortable in practice and doing nice, easy throwdowns and doing the stuff you're good at, you never get better. You have to make it difficult. So when you come up against Wagner or Bolt is swinging it or Southie's swinging it, you've prepared for it. I mean, do you know, before the England series in the Caribbean, this is no joke, I got some boot polish, right, for Anderson and Broad, and I got boot polish on all the practice balls, and I threw them off 16 yards. And I said, guys, if you can play this ball swinging around, Anderson will be easy after this. And it deliberately made it difficult, and then it was easier after that. You've got to make your practice difficult, realistic and difficult. And I agree with you on that.
I agree with you, Toby. I can remember when I used to play, and I don't like to look back on my era. I had a guy called Patterson Thompson, another guy called Dane Maynard.
Ooh.
And maybe go down to Kensington, it's short balls galore.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you go in the game, the short ball is nothing. It's a liquid ball. So you have to make practice tough.
Yeah, I agree.
All those guys to come and bowl fast at you because you need to get your game on. Our game is not on test match morning. And we're struggling. Our batsmen have it too easy. Mm. And our batting consultant, whoever he is, I would like him to be reviewed by the board.
Say that again, Philo.
We are making the same mistake. The batting consultant, whoever he is, needs to be reviewed by the board. Mm. What about batsmen look horrible again?
What about Phil Simmons? You think he's doing okay?
He needs to be reviewed too. No. He needs to be reviewed as well.
Okay, interesting.
You see, performances a lot.
Mm. What about Roddy Eswick?
Andrew, I'm not picking any.
What about Roddy Eswick?
Needs to be reviewed as well. Ooh. Andrew, our management team needs to be reviewed.
Oh dear.
Our cricket is poor. Our planning is poor. They will say that they've done this and they've done that, but the planning is poor, and obviously the players are not executing. They need to be reviewed. These happy, comfortable cushion guys need to be ruffled. We need some good performances. Cricketers are performers now. They need to produce. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Mm-hmm. We've gone through this, and the doc said it. This is too long that we're struggling against short balls and can't play the swinging ball. No. Phil Simmons played for Leicestershire successfully as an all rounder, bat and bowl. Wonderful fielder, very good, capable batsman, good bowler. Roddy Eswick, a good bowler. Why can't these guys get into these fellas' heads? What is required to push our cricket forward, to make us cricket, make Messi's cricket look good? The investments are being made.
So the
return on the investment is too poor.
So, Philo, before we go to Dr. Ford, and we're going to get a comment, of course, from Brian Waddle, you would say that the coaching staff is weak?
And the selection panel is weak. Ooh. We have to make some serious decisions on our cricket, Andrew. Mm. I'm serious. Roach is coming home. Dowrich is coming home. So two young players might get a game. You know, but we need to look through that crystal ball a lot faster. I know what Brian Waddle said, New Zealand don't drop players. You got to bat yourself out of the team. But our cricket is at a critical juncture where our batsmen have not been performing. And our wicketkeeper is coming home for personal reasons. But he played in the first test match and he had a bad finger.
Ooh.
But he's coming home for personal reasons. He's not coming home because of a bad finger. He's coming home for personal reasons. I would like some light to be shed on what is happening.
They're personal.
just before we go to you, Doc, of course, Toby made some very interesting points about intensity. You've been watching the West Indies at practice sessions. Do you get the feeling that they're intense, Brian, in terms of the practice sessions, from what you've seen?
I haven't seen enough of them because before they came to one, I didn't get to the series in Hamilton for the test match, and so I haven't seen a lot of their training sessions, so I can't really give an answer to that, but they've spent a lot of time in New Zealand. They should have spent a lot of time learning how to play in New Zealand. Some of them have been here before and they've got that experience, and it's pretty simple to my mind. It's the old KISS principle. Keep it simple and get on the same page. Everybody's got to be on the same page. That's part of the success for New Zealand at the moment. You know, they have a batting coach who is actually a wicketkeeper batsman, Luke Ronke. And Luke Ronke is there because they have faith in him. The players like talking to him. I don't know that Luke Ronke is going to coach Kane Williamson too much. Kane Williamson will find out from who he wants to find out about his game. But if they're on the same batting approach in terms of the mental attitude to the game, then they're doing the job right. And, you know, that's the consistency aspect that I get back to. And I sense sometimes I don't know too much about the political setup of the Caribbean game, but it seems to me as though there's a different leadership group comes out every 12 months. And, you know, you don't get consistency and continuity with that. You need somebody to set up, take the key framework of the game, the basics of it, and everybody get on the same page. And while I don't always agree with what New Zealand does, they are all on the same page. And at home, it works for them.
Mm. Doc?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We're talking about the batsmen. I was looking at the records and, you know, looking at batsmen who average over 35 outside the greats. And the last few that were on the periphery, like Hooper and maybe Logie and Sarwan, Adams, there are some that average over 35, 40. But when you even look back as far as Bacchus and Atherton and Ganga, Kieran Powell, Samuels, you have a list of at least 20 batsmen who've played more than 20 tests, some of them up to 71 tests, who've averaged in the 20s and 30s. So our problem dates back to beyond the great teams, and we've gone through so many coaches. You look at the stats of coaches and they're all under 50. They've all done badly in the tests. Probably they had some good times in the odd T20. So the thing is, personnel problems, coach stats problems, you know, so that batting is a real problem to solve. But I'd like to go back to some of the bowling, just to shift gears a little bit. Brian, when the West Indies started to bowl, we tended to bowl wide, and we also bowled a bit full. And then also we were angling the ball down the leg side and giving Williamson and some of the other batsmen easy singles, turning the ball off the hip. While when New Zealand bowled, the ball swung a little more. They bowled just not too full. And, you know, the odd short ball, the approach was different. And also the ball did more. Was it the conditions or was it all the approach of the bowlers?
Well, the conditions play an important part, and New Zealand has a bowling attack that works well in those conditions. The point I thought of at the time, you know, when New Zealand was put into bat on that first day, was the bowlers didn't make the New Zealand batsmen play enough. They had too many options to leave. You look at the bowling to Latham, they struggled to decide whether they wanted to bowl round the wicket or over the wicket to him. And therefore, you know, the ball was going down outside the off stump and he was able to leave. And in the first session, the New Zealand batsmen, as I said, good leavers, both of them, Latham and Williamson, were able to leave too many. And you get the length right and make them play a bit more. You know, when they did make them play, Will Young got a nick and it went close to their hands, I think, and then he got caught soon afterwards. But, you know, with the other players, it wasn't quite the same. And so the bowling strategy has to be better organised.
Yeah. Philo, getting back to that, the way they bowled, New Zealand left the ball quite a lot. And, you know, they put away the bad ball, the full ball, the short ball, the wide ball they cut. But you look at the West Indies, you know, some of the batsmen drove some really wide full balls. And you remember the uppercut that Brathwaite got out trying to play. But yet Blackwood was aggressive. I mean, how do we temper our natural flair for being aggressive with leaving the ball? Is it about your strengths as a batsman, or is it about just being disciplined? And
I think the combination of both. You have to be strong to leave the ball. You have to have good judgment as well. And then you can leave a ball aggressively, you know. If you look at Mark Taylor, Desmond Hayes, Gordon Greenidge, they left a lot of balls aggressively and forced the bowlers to bowl to them. Our batsmen tend to want to hit the ball, chase after a lot of balls. If you look at the way how Saudi and those guys bowl, Saudi jumps close to the stumps and then the fifth ball or sixth ball, he goes wide of the crease, but he pushes the ball on the same line and look to take the ball away. Our batsmen, because they're not balanced, they're not triggering their feet together to position, they just lunge at the ball and they find their hands lead rather than their head and shoulder going into the ball, and they find themselves chasing too many wild balls. And if you look at Blackwood's first innings dismissal, that was similar, but he rectified it in the second innings. So our batsmen need to allow the bowlers to come closer, because once you get close to the ball, Toby will tell you, you can knock it away. And the outfields in New Zealand, that outfield seemed to be not so big. So once you get the ball past the infield, you can get runs. So I think that our batsmen need to be a bit more patient and trust their ability, trust their technique as batsmen a bit more. And then obviously execute the good shots when they can.
Doctor, just before you ask the question, we got Philip Spoon from Cricket West Indies on the line. Philip, good evening to you.
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening to everyone on the Zoom and all the listeners all around the world, especially to Philo, my former teammate at Spartan.
Brian, good night.
I last saw Brian in New Zealand last tour. So, Brian, all the best to you and Doc. As always, I see you all the time on yep. when we traverse right. Broad Street. So, so yeah. So, Andrew, I don't mean to cross the discussion in any way. I know you're obviously discussing the test series in New Zealand, but I just wanted to update on something that we just had. We were just on a Zoom with Cricket Australia, and what we were doing, it was a bit of the start of the celebration of the 60th anniversary of the Tight Test.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Tight Test was played at the Gabba in Brisbane December 9th. It started on December 9th, you know, in 1960s. Frank Worrell being the captain of the West Indies, which you've been all being the captain of Australia. And we just organized for sort of a mini reunion of those who were available at the time. We had Peter Lashley, who made his debut in that match, Lance Gibbs, who was 12th man. And we also heard from Alan Davidson and Neil Harvey from Australia. It was a really fantastic event. You know, it was just reconnecting on looking at the game and, you know, of the four gentlemen speaking about the match itself, but then the legacy of West Indies cricket and Australian cricket and indeed world cricket. So we're going to have a few more events, a lot of them based on social media. As you know, most of the gentlemen, some of the gentlemen who played in the match have passed away. And, you know, and we want to show full respect to everyone who participated in that very famous series, 1960-61, when the West Indies went to Australia and left as heroes.
Mm-hmm. Tremendous. You
know, and, yeah. So I just wanted to put that out there, that historic date tomorrow. Well, it's already, you know, the 9th in New Zealand and in Australia. Brian is already in his Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, Alan Davidson and Neil Harvey, they're also in their Wednesday. Tomorrow is obviously Wednesday here in the Caribbean, but tomorrow is the official date to start the test match. And then obviously we had a rest day in the middle, so the match actually spanned 6 days. I remember how it ended with Joe Solomon, you know, that fantastic runner-off in the World Board by the great Sylvester Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So Peter Lashley, you know, had a bit of, he talked about the scenario where he said that he was feeling close to Solomon, and Solomon said, move, move.
Mm-hmm.
And he got out of the way, and Solomon was able to throw it on his stumps twice in the last over. And Alan Davidson, a remarkable memory. He's over age 90. He
yes.
has a remarkable memory, and he was able to run through the match in great detail. And he described it as the greatest match that's ever been played in the history of cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And the series was definitely the greatest series in the history of the game. And the memories just came flowing back. And what we'll try to do is we'll try to get the audio and the video available, and we'll have it so that you can probably hear it
sure.
in the next show.
Of course.
It's not ready yet, but we'll mm-hmm. try to get it available and try to get it, you know, out there so that persons can relive those memories with these great men and also see, you know, get a bit of a feel as to what it was like to be on the field with people, persons like esteemed gentlemen like Sir Frank Worrell, Richie Benaud, you know, Sir Garfield Sobers, Sir Conrad Hunt. You know, the list just goes on. The best of the best that cricket has ever produced. Mm-hmm. So I'll let you get back to your discussion, your robust.
Yeah, as usual, of course, when Fellow's on, it will be robust. Yeah. And of course, yeah. Toby, not so robust, but.
Well,
apologies.
I wasn't aware that Toby was on. Toby,
Toby Radford.
Oh, my apologies, Toby. We work
together.
How are
you, folks?
Yeah, I'm fine, Toby.
Yeah,
great to meet you as well. All the best to you and your family. And but bring you up to speed that tomorrow, December the 9th, is start of, you know, the anniversary, 60th anniversary of the famous Tight Test, West Indies versus Australia at the Gabba,
mm-hmm.
one of the greatest matches in the history of cricket. And as Neil Harvey said, the match that saved Australia cricket and moved it forward.
Yes, and quite appropriately, the statue of Wes was unveiled, you know, just a couple of days ago. Quite appropriate as well.
Oh, yeah, that was a magnificent ceremony. Andre had the honor of being there to see the unveiling by the great man. So Wes, all he spoke, as he always does, you know, extremely very, very uplifting speech, very mm-hmm. forward-thinking, mm-hmm. challenging young people to, you know, to rise to the challenge and you know, and to take the nation forward. And he did make a point in his speech when he said, if persons like himself can rise to the top and dominate the world, he believes that all young Barbadians, those that even those yet unborn, can also rise to the top and, mm-hmm. and you know, and be another Red Hall, you mm-hmm. know. So That was a fantastic ceremony, well put on, and you know, very well attended. And it was really a delight now to see both statues standing majestically next to each other outside the Oval.
Tremendous.
And I hope that everybody who goes to the Oval from now on would pause for a moment, you know, and reflect on the great performances of these gentlemen, and also the legacy, you know, that is there to be carried on.
Mm. Just before you go, Philo, Kemar Roach coming back now? When is he due in Barbados?
I'm not sure exactly his return date, but the team moved on to the team in New Zealand moved on to Wellington. So I believe Kemar's flight out of Hamilton, well, from Hamilton to Auckland will probably be on that same day. So, you know, it takes a while to get to and from New Zealand.
Right.
So I'll be picking up on that probably. I'll pick up on that tomorrow, and I'll speak to, you know, the office and get the details on his return. Obviously, you know, he's obviously, you know, his father passed away, and we want to also, you know, offer condolences to him and his family.
Mm-hmm.
And the pass of his father is never easy. Obviously, he did, you know, strike on during the test match, but you can see from the emotion that he displayed that it was a very difficult situation.
Mm-hmm. And Shane Dowridge, you don't know when he's back?
Well, again, that's something I'll have to find out.
One final thing. What's the nature of Dowridge's injury? Do you know?
Dowridge sustained a hand injury, but his reason for return is his personal reason, and we want to respect.
Personal. Fine. All right.
That's where that stands. Oh. But we want to offer you full support.
Right to him. Kemar. Personal.
Yeah.
All right.
So, Andrew, thanks again for offering me the opportunity to come in.
Right.
And I'll continue to listen. Well, I was just off the Zoom with the Taita, so I'll start listening to your show.
Mm.
And again, I want to just say, you know, thanks as always, and good evening to everybody, and all the best. And everybody, just stay safe.
All right. Wonderful. Thanks to Philip Spoon, of course, of Cricket West Indies, and a tremendous man in terms of communications. Gentlemen, let's get back, of course, to what we've been discussing. Toby, is the West Indies team coachable? Is that a strange question?
Definitely.
Definitely?
No, definitely coachable. Oh,
well, tell me, because I'm beginning to wonder.
Well, I mean, it is coachable. These are fine players. They're good men. They're hard workers. They just need clear plans, clear strategy. You've got to look at every individual. Some will need a bit of technical work. Some will need a bit of mental work. Some will need, you know, as a coach, you've got to know the player you're working with, and you build that relationship, and you start to get to know them and what they need and what makes them tick, and what's going to give them consistency as a player. But they're very much coachable. We've seen they've had results. You know, a couple of years ago, as we know, they beat England in the Caribbean back in 2019, just over a year ago. So we know they can win. What we've got to do is deliver more consistently. But they're certainly coachable. I still have very good relationships with a lot of those players. You know, ultimately, I think, as we talked about earlier, I think the way that they prepare, I think they've got to push themselves a bit more in training. I think they've got to be more specific about how they practice for up-and-coming bowlers, for the pitches they're going to play on. So there needs to be a lot of thought going into whether it's the bowling strategy of how you're going to bowl to Kane and these different batters and how you're going to play their bowlers. And practice has to fit that. It's difficult for me to comment on in terms of what they're delivering at the moment, because I don't know how they are practicing and I don't know what they're working on. You know, we don't know whether they are putting in that type of strategy and then implementing it in practice. They may well be doing that.
Mm.
I actually would love to talk about something and broaden the conversation.
Sure.
And this is something that I've felt in the last 10 years working out there. I personally feel, and I've always felt this, I worked with the HPC when, as we know, with Holder and Gabriel, when all these lads came through in 2010. There's talent there. I believe there's more talent, natural talent in the Caribbean than there is in England. What there is lacking in the Caribbean, in my opinion, is investment in quality pitches and quality practice areas, good quality nets for the players who want to practice. I think there's a lack of equipment. I used to turn up on islands trying to prepare an international team. Some of the islands didn't have a bowling machine. Or if they had a bowling machine, it had two legs instead of three. There was a real lack, I think, a lack of equipment, a lack of facilities to practice in. And what I've seen in England, you may start with a lower base of player, but what they've got, you turn up even in schools, they've got five lanes, four bowling machines. Lads who want to hit balls can hit balls all day. And I personally would love to see in the Caribbean some investment in pitches, bowling machines, practice facilities, because I really believe the talent is there. There's the same talent there deep down as there was 20, 30 years ago when the West Indies were beating everyone. But in that 30 years, England, Australia, all these other countries, even New Zealand, they've invested heavily in academies, pitches. They've got indoor schools where people can go in and practice. And I don't see that in the Caribbean. And some of these lads, bless them, they're being judged against these best teams in the world, but they haven't got the same facilities to practice on. And that's what I would love to see. And whether that money comes from companies, whether it comes from the West Indies board, I think investment is needed. And for the future generations of West Indies cricket, if we don't want to keep having these conversations about winning and losing and winning and losing, if we want more consistency, you've got to invest. And the other countries have done that. And I think the West Indies are relying on pure talent alone. Talent alone isn't going to beat all these other countries who are throwing in money and buying all the nets and the facilities and improving their pitches. That's how we're going to make better players consistently, in my opinion. Phil, and that's, I'm throwing that out because I genuinely believe that.
Toby is speaking truthfully about the facilities. We know that facilities are lacking. And obviously, facilities have been lacking for a very long time in the Caribbean. Now, facilities to improve or come on stream has to be territorial boards. Do the territorial boards have the marketing skills or to go there and market this game called cricket to get people to buy into the concept of getting facilities? I know in Trinidad, a guy has set up a lovely facility there, but obviously you have to pay to go and train. How many people will do that? But the thing is that we need to get the facilities right. And once you get the facilities right, then you get the attitudes to go with those facilities. And then at the extension, the pitches will come on because then the groundsmen, it's a whole collective thing, you know, Andrew. Once you got facilities, you got the players, the groundsmen then will start to improve in their skills and the whole game will lift. Where does it start from? Do we start from the grassroots? Do we start from schools cricket? Or does the territorial boards decide, look, we're going to carry out a campaign to get better facilities in various areas? We know Barbados is under 6 square miles. So we can gauge where we can have these facilities and work towards getting the best players to come in there. Or not even so good the best, but the cricketers to come in and work with them, get the best skilled coaches. And I think that sometimes, Andrew, we have to give a little leeway to our former greats. Not all of them might obtain have a coaching certificate, but I think we can lean upon them for experience, to bring those experiences that they have had into the pool and give another idea or another way of how these young players should look at it. So facilities, yes, are important, Andrew, but then we have to get the right personnel in there to manage those players, because there's a lot of talent. And I'm happy to hear Toby saying that there's more talent in the Caribbean than in England.
There is.
So if there's more talent in the Caribbean than in England, what are the boards doing?
See, Philo, I'll never forget. I was preparing. I can't remember what tour it was. It was a tour a couple of years ago. And I was trying to prepare the team, right? And the nets had holes in them. The pitch was awful at the back. It was almost bouncing twice. This was an international team who were going to be judged against a top international side, right? I came back from the trip back to England and I went and did a bit of coaching in a school up in Berkshire. I went in there, 5 indoor lanes, 4 bowling machines, a Merlin spin. I thought the West Indies team hasn't got this, the international team. And a little school side in Berkshire with little 13-year-olds have got 4 lanes, 5 lanes, 4 bowling machines. Now, that can't be right, because that these poor lads are still being judged against the best teams in the world. The investment in Australia, the investment in England, it's almost incomparable. It's almost unfair on these West Indies lads. They're doing their best given what they've got. And you know what I always found? They never moaned about it. They do their best. But I felt sorry for them at times where they're trying to prepare for a test match. They're facing bowling. The bloody ball's bowling twice. Or it's going over the head off a leg. You need these good facilities. You need equipment. Then there's no excuses. And as a coach, I like to take all the excuses away from players. But I have to be fair as well. And if the ball's running along the floor and there's holes in the nets and the bowling machine doesn't work, you have to take that into account. And if we want better results, which we all do for the West Indies cricket, we all love West Indies cricket, over the next 20 and 30 years, let's put some money into these key areas. And actually, I don't think it takes a lot of money. I've been to New Zealand and Australia, and I've seen lots of little prefab buildings with 2 lanes, a little bit of green flooring, good lighting, and a couple of bowling machines. It doesn't cost a lot of money. Honestly, it's not that expensive to set those up in each of the islands, all the territories, and get those players who want to practice practicing. Because I speak to a lot of these young West Indian lads and they say, I want to practice, I've got nowhere to go, I can't get to the net, or I haven't got a machine. And these are potential players for the next batch of West Indies cricket. They've got nowhere to go and practice. And if they were in England, if they were in a basic school in England, they could be hitting balls all day long. And this is what's happening. The average player in England is lower, but he's hitting thousands of balls every week. And the poor lad in West Indies has got more talent. He can't go and hit any balls. So he gets overtaken. And honestly, that's what I've seen in my 10 years. And that's what I think is happening. Put a little bit of money into these cares and you'll sail again, because the talent is there and it'll carry on being there. I really believe it.
All right, when we come back, we're going to go to Brian and talk about is there really interest, and I'm sure that New Zealanders are very disappointed with what they've seen for the West Indies, and we're going to also take your calls at 434-1790, of course, if you're calling from overseas, 246 in front. Mason and Guest is brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.